spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, In the Silent House, was written by Morton Wishengrind. I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains. From whence shall my help come? My help cometh from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. Early in the morning of July 25th, 1837, a visitor from Boston came to the New Hampshire farmhouse of Daniel and Harmony Bridgman.
Please come in, Dr. Howe. Laura is waiting.
My name is Dr. Samuel Gridley Howe, Boston. I was he who came. She who was waiting was the child, Laura Bridgman. She was waiting in the silent house of her 7 dark years. Laura was blind, deaf, dumb, without a sense of smell, with only the barest sense of taste.
Dr. Howe, this is Laura.
Please sit down, sir.
Thank you, but I prefer to stand. When did all this happen, Mrs. Bridgman?
She was 2 years old, the scarlet fever.
Dr. Howe, I do not speak against Providence, but it would have been better had she not lived.
She's a lovely child, Mr. Bridgman.
Lovely blind, lovely deaf, lovely dumb. You call that...
Daniel, you promised.
Mrs. Bridgman, does the child never make a sound?
A speaking sound?
Yes.
Never, Dr. Howe. But if I pat her head and bend to her cheek and kiss her, she laughs.
Sometimes, if she's hungry, she may cry. The laugh or the cry, nothing else.
Mr. Bridgman, how much time are you able to devote to Laura?
I'm a farmer, Dr. Howe.
And you, Mrs. Bridgman?
I'm a farmer's wife. I cook, I clean, I spin and weave, I churn butter and tend the poultry, I make the soap and the candles. There is not much time left for Laura.
May I say something to you both?
Aye, you may.
Laura needs someone's constant attention. I could give her that attention. Would you give it to me?
You mean you want her?
Very much, Mr. Bridgman. In Boston, I have started a little school for blind children. I've had some success with them. Perhaps I will have success with Laura.
I'm not a rich man.
I have not asked you for money.
Aye, but you will.
No, Mr. Bridgman, I will not.
Then why do you do this?
Perhaps because I want to. Perhaps because I can't help myself. Perhaps because I have theories of education which I want to see tested. Mrs. Bridgman, I will be good to her.
You really want my baby?
Yes, I do.
All right. Give us a few months. We'll bring her to you.
In October 1837, Daniel and Harmony Bridgman brought Laura to Boston and left her with me. She was then 8 years old. She lacked all senses but one, the sense of touch. Yet I found that she had become familiar with much in the world about her. She knew the form, weight, density, and temperature of things in the house. It was something with which my teachers and I could begin.
Laura's here, Dr. Howe.
She was brought to me for her first blessing, a small human presence, alone and lost in the seeing, hearing, speaking world.
Laura and I are ready, sir.
Thank you, Miss Drew. And the things I asked for?
Yes, a latchkey, a spoon, and a knife. Mrs. Smith gave them to me.
Have you brought the paper labels I made last night?
It's all here, Dr. Howe.
Miss Drew, what do you think of her?
Well, she's a beautiful child, sir. Is that what you mean?
Perhaps. I have an unusual request. Could I ask you to stroke the child's head?
I'll be glad to. How soft her hair is.
And would you mind if I asked you to kiss her cheek?
I do not mind. But why, Dr. Howe?
I believe Laura Bridgman has the capacity for becoming a gentle, docile woman. But she has the liability also of becoming a ferocious and unmanageable creature. Perhaps if we begin with an act of love.
Say no more, Dr. Howe. I will kiss her. That's the first sound I've heard her make. A very good sound for the beginning of learning.
Where sight alone is cut off, the blind can yet speak words. Where hearing and speech are cut off, the deaf mute may talk by signs. Laura had nothing, except perhaps a disposition to communicate with her fellow humans. And upon the faith of this desire being active in her, our hopes of teaching her to use language were founded.
Laura and I are ready, Dr. Howe. Sit, Laura. Why, Dr. Howe, she sits down. She hears me.
She hears nothing, Miss Drew.
But she sat...
You pressed her shoulder down. That was her cue to sit.
He is intelligent. How good.
An intelligent response should always be rewarded with a pat. Laura? Good morning, Laura. Good morning, my dear.
Look, she is smiling.
A smile with a pat on the head. A laugh for a kiss. We have communicated affection. Now we must begin to try to communicate language. Miss Drew, will you place the key on the table? The knife, please. And the spoon. Thank you. The labels?
Here you are, Doctor. I'm afraid, sir, this experiment is not clear to me.
These labels spell out the words key, spoon, knife.
Yes,
do they not?
Well, the child can't read.
She can touch. Miss Drew, touch these labels.
Why, the letters are raised.
So they are. Perhaps you will perceive the analogy between these words and the objects for which they stand. Take her hand now and show her fingers the letters which spell out the word key. Good. Now let her feel the actual key itself. Good. Again, please.
I shall shut my eyes, Dr. Howe. I shall also be blind. Laura and I shall be learning together. Come, Laura. Touch, 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 touch.
So quick was her perception that in a short time, Laura was able to place the label with the word key upon the key, the label spoon upon the spoon, the label book upon the book. Miss Drew kissed her. After continuing this exercise for several days, the label for the word book was cut into four parts.
B-O-O-K.
Now mix the letters.
Yes, easily done, sir. There.
Now guide her fingers to them.
Why, Laura, why are you pouting? Child, don't pout so. It spoils your features. Laura.
She's confused, Miss Drew.
But why, sir?
Her nice, neat, orderly letters are all mixed up.
Sit down, child.
Don't restrain her. Let her express her agitation.
Laura, darling, we don't want to trouble. We don't want to hurt you. It's only a little game we're playing.
Take her arm. Gently.
Yes, sir.
Stroke her hair.
Yes, sir.
Like that, Miss Drew. Like that. Good. resume the lesson.
Nothing to fear, Laura. No need to draw away. Now come, follow my hand. I will guide you. See? B-O-O-K. Touch B-O-O-K.
Again, Miss Drew. Don't stop.
B-O-O-K. B-O-O-K. I am learning too, Doctor. Soon, Laura, both of us will be able to see through our fingers. B-O-O-K. Book.
Slowly, patiently, day after day.
B-O-O-K.
Week after week.
Again now, B-O-O-K.
Month after month, exercises like these went on. It was not very encouraging. There was not much more success than in teaching a very intelligent dog a variety of tricks. And then, without knowing it, we approached the moment when the thought flashed upon Laura Bridgman that all these were effects to establish a means of communication between her thoughts and ours.
Dr. Howe, watch her fingers. Laura, not so fast. Not so fast, child. You're doing it too fast.
Laura's intellect had begun to work. She had finally perceived that here was a way she could make up a sign of anything that was in her mind and show it to another mind. She sprang to her feet, expressing her pleasure through her feet in a kind of jig.
She understands. She knows she's no longer a trained dog or a trained parrot. She is no longer imitating. She is thinking. Oh, Dr. Howe, I am very happy.
Yes, Miss Drew. It is a good day.
Oh, if I may be permitted, sir. Today I should like to stay longer.
If you wish, of course.
And I want to do something special for her.
Anything you desire.
Laura, Laura, Laura. Today I shall wash your head and brush your hair. I shall brush your soul, Laura Bridgman, and your immortal spirit.
It was as though everything to this point had been prologue. Now there commenced the real education of Laura Bridgman.
A, B, C, D.
We taught her the letters of the alphabet with perforated metal strips.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And the first 10 numerals.
Comma, question mark, exclamation point.
We taught her to express the names of things. Every thought, every feeling, every shade of mood. And we taught her how to spell out her words upon her tiny, sensitive, expressive fingers.
How she is talking. Laura is talking with her fingers.
Listen. Can you hear? Laura Bridgman is talking. Can you hear the words? Try. Try harder. Out of space and loneliness and darkness, she is talking. Listen. Listen to her fingers communicating. The immortal human spirit communicating. Listen to her fingers. These are her fingers speaking her first sentences.
Laura.
Laura.
Bread.
Bread.
Give.
Give.
Water.
Water.
Drink.
Drink.
Laura.
Laura.
I conducted a small school in Boston where blind children could play together in safety. And in the year 1838, a little girl named Lorena, who was only blind, began to play happily with a little girl named Laura Bridgman, who was blind and deaf and dumb, without a sense of smell, with only the barest sense of taste.
Lorena?
Yes, Miss Drew?
Laura's talking to you.
Laura doesn't talk.
Oh, yes, dear. She talks with her fingers. Reach out and touch her fingers.
They're flying every which way. What is she saying, Miss Drew?
Now, let's see. L, A, U, R, A.
Laura.
N, O, T.
Laura not.
A, L, O, N, E.
I know. She means Laura isn't alone. That's because I'm a playmate. That's because she
hasn't finished.
What does she say?
L, A, U, R, A.
Laura.
N, O, W.
Laura. Now.
A-L-T-W-O.
Laura is now all too. Oh, I love her, Miss Drew. She's so smart.
Mm-hmm. She can never see a ray of light, but she has the sight of understanding. She can never hear a single sound, but she has the capacity to know. Her mind dwells in the silent house of darkness, but she lives. For when she is alone, she amuses herself by spelling out for herself whatever she has recently learned. The names of things, numbers, places. And in this lonely communion, she reasons, reflects, and creates. Would you know what Laura Bridgman creates? Her fingers spell it out. You cannot read the language of her fingers? Very well. You shall be able to hear her fingers. This is my entry for August 9th, 1841. You shall hear the sound of Laura's fingers.
What are you saying, Laura?
It rains.
How can you tell, dear?
Wet on face. Why does it rain? Tell, Laura.
Rain comes from clouds, my dear. Clouds are full of water, and rain is cloud water falling to the ground.
No. You're wrong.
Oh, child, how do you know I'm wrong?
Rain is when God is very full.
Laura, who told you about God?
No one.
Child, tell me more about God.
Not now. Think is tired. Not now.
She learned to write. Yes, Laura Bridgman. She wrote crudely at first, then better. She wrote letters to her mother in New Hampshire. She wrote little notes for me. She kept a diary, recording all the things her little fingers saw and heard and spoke.
Laura did go ride in carriage. Ride did make Laura's side ache. Horse was wrong. Did not go softly.
Horse was wrong. There was right and there was wrong. There was in her a compulsion toward morality, a preoccupation with good and evil.
I envy you, Dr. Howe.
Why should you envy me, Mistra?
To be so loved by another human being as you are by that child. Sir, it is not my place to ask. I am presumptuous, but I find...
But what, Mistra?
Well, why do you give your life to this work? You're esteemed throughout Boston and all of Massachusetts. You could be senator, governor, whatever you wished. Why do you spend your life here?
This interests me, Miss Drew. Other things do not.
You are very good. A very benevolent man.
I'm a very selfish man. I do what I please. My benevolence, as you call it, is only a mask for self-indulgence. I think it is time for Laura's geography lesson. You might show her the position of New Hampshire in the village of Hanover, where she was born. I've not written to her parents in some time. You see how thoughtless and self-centered I really am? Dear Mr. and Mrs. Bridgman, Laura has had almost uninterrupted good health and has grown in stature and strength. She is now tall for her age, well-proportioned, and very active. The acuteness of her touch and of the sense of feeling generally have increased sensibly
during the last year. She recognizes her friend by the slightest touch of their hands. She never fails to notice when I have changed my coat. Like a bee, she has the power of going straight toward a given point directly and confidently, not groping or feeling her way.
Why have you stopped?
He writes that she talks of God.
Is that to be wondered at?
Isn't it? Listen. She talks of God, and she asks such questions. How did the masons pile up bricks before a floor was made to stand on? Read on. Read on what Dr. Howe writes.
I shall attempt to give her a faint idea of the power and love of that being whose praise she is every day so clearly proclaiming by her glad enjoyment of the existence which she has given her. Harmony, have you papers for writing?
You know I have. Why?
Write to Dr. Howe. I want to see my little girl. Write and ask if she can come home for a visit.
And so with Miss Drew to accompany her, Laura returned for a visit to the New Hampshire farmhouse where she had been born into the world.
She goes from room to room, Miss Drew, touching everything.
She is remembering through her fingers. She...
Why does she stop?
Mrs. Bridgman, could you come in for a moment? Laura wants you.
Of course. I have baked her the little cookie cake she loved when she was a baby. Won't you taste one, Miss Drew?
Why, Mrs. Bridgman, how thoughtful of you. You've baked letters of the alphabet.
My husband helped me to cut the dough for it. The first time I've ever known Daniel to work in the kitchen.
Give them to her. Laura, your mother has baked some cookies for you to eat.
Take them, child. All for you.
I'll tell her.
Come here and take them. Daughter, these letters of the alphabet are good to eat. Taste one, darling. Taste one.
Wait, wait. She's spelling out a word. M O T H E R. You see the word she spelled out for you?
Oh, I do see the word, Daniel Bridgman. I have baked my cakes, and I am very full.
Miss Drew wrote to me how during this visit, on an evening when Mrs. Bridgman sat weary but happy before the fire, how Laura took her mother's hand.
She's teaching me the finger alphabet. She's teaching me.
And each evening thereafter, during the next 3 weeks, the mother sat and was instructed by the child with whom she had never thought to exchange a word, bending toil-worn fingers to these new forms, signs which were to be the means of bringing these two nearer together than ever before. And when the 3 weeks had expired, and Laura and Miss Drew stood at the door ready to return to Boston, Harmony Bridgman spoke to her daughter through her fingers.
Come here, girl. You will come again?
And Laura replied.
I will.
And you will teach me new things?
I teach you.
Do you laugh? You have taught me a very great deal. Laura, I give you a message to take back to Boston.
Yes, Mother.
It is a message from Daniel and Harmony Bridgman to Dr. Samuel Gridley Howe.
I listen.
The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee.
And so Laura Bridgman returned to us in Boston. She did not know it. She could not know it. But she was returning to become the most famous woman of her generation. She was returning to inspire all mankind with the gladness of her life. And one day out of that gladness, she wrote a poem. Yes, Laura Bridgman, blind, mute, deaf, out of her immortal spirit, Laura Bridgman wrote a poem. Listen clearly to the words her finger spoke.
Don't be shy, Laura. Say your poem for Dr. Howe.
Child, never before have you been shy with me.
Laura, go and take the doctor's hand.
Come to me, Laura. Now say your poem.
By the finger of God, my eyes and my ears shall be opened. The string of my tongue will be loosed.
Let me tell you something. During Laura Bridgman's lifetime, she was a cry in the ear of God. And because she was alive and did not despair, no man, no woman, no child could abandon hope. From nation to nation, the word passed that a spirit like Laura Bridgman was abroad in the world. And she became a great truth. The truth that hope and love are strong enough to work any miracle on this earth. Out of this child, there went forth a lesson of the gladness of life. Even to those who are born in darkness and wait in the silent house. Thank you. like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take pleasure in presenting Mr. Frank Goldman, president of B'nai B'rith, speaking from Boston. Mr. Goldman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the moving story of Laura Bridgman we have just heard, a strong testament of faith and love, also reflects the basic principle upon which B'nai B'rith was founded, the simple desire to help one's fellow man. This principle is the embodiment of our great Jewish heritage and of our rich American tradition. It has become a cornerstone of American Jewish life, a foundation upon which has been built an ever-growing structure of service to all people, regardless of race, creed, or color. We in B'nai B'rith have good cause to celebrate. Saturday, October 13th, marked our 108th anniversary. B'nai B'rith has come a long way in these years. We have seen our programs of service extend and grow until today. We are the largest Jewish membership body in the world, embracing the villages, hamlets, towns, and cities of our own country, and reaching out as well into Canada and foreign shores. Everywhere, our lodges and chapters, our men and women, are carrying forth our basic principles of benevolence, brotherly love, and harmony. These principles are not mere words. The B'nai B'rith programs have translated the constructive aspirations of our people into concrete community projects and into departments which are giants of service on the American Jewish scene. Who of us has not been affected, directly or indirectly, by the mammoth work of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith as it fights bigotry and strengthens our democracy? Or of the B'nai B'rith Hillel Foundations, which are giving new meaning to Jewish values on hundreds of college campuses? Or of the widespread programs of the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization working with the leaders of tomorrow? Who of us is unfamiliar with countless other B'nai B'rith services in aiding young people find appropriate careers, in serving the members of the armed forces and disabled veterans, in promoting Americanism programs, and in aiding Israel and cooperating with the United Nations? With these programs, B'nai B'rith moves forward, not content to rest on its past traditions, but eager to carve newer and even greater accomplishments in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Our Eternal Light drama today was written by Morton Wishengrad. Santos Ortega was heard as Dr. Howe, Joan Alexander as Miss Drew, and Denise Alexander was Laura Bridgman. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.